Turks on a momentous day. We have a gigantic show ahead for you guys. Later in the program, is Donald Trump going to fire his own son-in-law? All of a sudden, it's possible. That's a hilarious story. You love that story. Breitbart might be reeling. Not yet. But there's a super important story about that. We'll get to it. The Republicans have unveiled their tax cut plans. You're going to be shocked to find out who it benefits. Don't tell me multinational corporations and the rich. But the way that it screws over the middle class is amazing. We'll have the details for you later. John Iarola is going to come in and tell us all about that. And then if there's two giant stories today, the exclusive we're about to do, and Donna Brazile has come out and said, yes, in fact, the Democratic primaries were rigged. So that is an amazing story, and that's the story I'll have for you in the next segment. And then you know that today we are doing 3 hours of extra show for you guys. We'll have the normal 6 to 8 p.m. show that you're watching right now, and then 8 to 11 o'clock, we are going to be featuring Justice Democratic candidates and starting our 2018 election coverage already. Okay, and we'll be showing you Paula Jean Swearengin. She is the Senate candidate running against Joe Manchin. And then you've got wonderful other candidates, Rosa Calderon, Cori Bush, Doug Applegate, who came this close to beating Daryl Issa last time and will beat him this time around. He's going to be in studio. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez taking on one of the most powerful Democrats in the country, Joseph Crowley in New York. Then you've got Dottie Nycard and Charto Richardson. They're all coming. Jimmy Dore is coming. Oh no, Mordor. So 3 hours of almost aggressive progressive later tonight, you guys are going to love it. But now, without further ado, the dramatic announcement. We are now ready to announce the new Justice Democratic candidate for the California Senate seat, the one very temporarily occupied by Dianne Feinstein. She's been in office for nearly half a century through all of her political career. But soon she will be sent to retirement by the person you're about to meet. Without further ado, let me introduce to you Allison Hartson, former national director of Wolfpack and new Senate candidate and future senator from California. Allison, welcome to the Young Turks.
Thank you, Cenk. So right. Happy to be here.
All right, great to have you. I feel like I should play this.
Yes.
Allison, will you be running as a Justice Democrat?
You bet I will. Yep.
All right, excellent. And will you be our champion?
I will be your champion.
All right, yes. Excellent. Now, Allison, you ran an organization whose sole mission is to get money out of politics. But before that, you were a teacher. I'm going to talk about that in a second. I'm going to ask you about that. Mm-hmm. But first, most important question, why are you running for this seat?
California is really needs a bold progressive to lead the way. And this particular race in 2018 is going to be one of the most, if not the most important race in 2018 in the country. And that's because California is the sixth largest economy in the world. It's because a lot of what we do does in fact influence the country. There's a saying that said that goes, as California goes, so too does the country. When I first heard that, I thought, yeah, okay, I'm sure every state says that. Mm-hmm. But then I started traveling around the country with Wolfpack, and I talked to state legislators, and I talked to voters on the ground, knocking on doors, talking about the corrupting influence of money in our political system. And several legislators and voters in different states would ask me if California had done this yet. And it wasn't because at all that I lived in California. They didn't know that yet. They would ask me and then I would tell them, well, I happen to be from California. And we did in fact pass our resolution in California. And then that would cause them to pause and say, okay, and really, really consider what it is that their state should be doing too. So it is vitally important who we have at the helm of California. This Senate race is important that we have a progressive in there, not just for the state of California, but for the country, and quite frankly, for the DNC. We've got to get these corporate Democrats out.
All right, now let me tell you another fun part of this dramatic announcement. I will be Allison's campaign advisor.
I love that smile.
So we're coming at 100 miles an hour. This will not be a normal campaign. And I'll tell you why I'm animated by it. And Allison, I share your sentiment about how important this race is. And that's why we spent so much time trying to figure out who the right candidate was. And as you meet Allison, I think you'll see that she's the perfect candidate for this. She's worked for the last 5 years on the issue that people in California and progressives care the most about. And she has a great background, as you guys are going to see in a second. But when you find out how conservative Dianne Feinstein is, it is unconscionable that she's our senator in California. She is against Medicare for all. She's against college for all. She says it's impractical to give your kids free tuition and a shot at the American dream. She voted for the Iraq War. She voted for Bush's tax cuts. She's for the death penalty. She's for the Patriot Act. She has never done anything on money and politics. She's against marijuana legalization. She supports TPP. And she's, of course, also for warrantless wiretapping. She has got to go. Now, Allison, you say you're a true progressive. Obviously, people are going to want to know about that. And so what are the issues that you care about most?
Well, you know, it's really difficult to divorce or separate one issue from another. They're all connected. They all affect each other. The intersectionality of every issue that affects our everyday lives is important for us to understand. And so education affects prison, and healthcare and the economy affect one another. And so we have to fight for all of these things, and we have to do it at the same time. But the one thing that is connected to every single one of those issues is the corrupting influence of money in our political system. And that is why I have spent the last 5 years of my life fighting to get a 28th Amendment to the US Constitution that will overturn Citizens United and every other Supreme Court case that has gotten our country into this mess. We have to do that. And while we're doing that, we also have to make sure that we have Medicare for all throughout the country, that we have a $15 minimum wage that is tied to inflation. Every human being deserves to make a living wage. And we need to make sure that students who earn their way into college can afford it. We need free tuition for college. We need to deprivatize our public education system. We need to deprivatize our private prisons and our detention centers. The list goes on. They all feed on one another. And so we need people in Congress who are going to understand that all of these issues have to be moving forward at the same time.
Now, Dianne Feinstein is going to raise a lot of money for this race, as she always does. And she has taken, is it tens or hundreds of millions of dollars in legalized bribes?
It's definitely up there. It's got to be hundreds of millions of dollars. But she's taken millions of dollars from Big Pharma. She's taken millions of dollars from corporations. She's taken millions of dollars from defense contractors. And these influence her decisions. And it's no surprise, right? Dianne Feinstein is worth an estimated $80 million.
Mm-hmm. So if she's worth $80 million and she's fighting like hell to get money out of politics, bless her heart. But she's had 25 years in the Senate to do something about money in politics, has she?
No, she hasn't. And that's just exactly it, right? So I'll give you one example. Bernie Sanders introduced an amendment or a resolution in Congress in 2015 that would help to get a constitutional amendment to the US Constitution to overturn Citizens United and related cases, as I was speaking to earlier. Not a single co-sponsor on that. That means Dianne Feinstein did not co-sponsor and support Bernie Sanders' amendment to the US Constitution to address the number one issue that polls show is in the 90th percentile in the country of people wanting to get this done. That cuts across party lines.
So sometimes people will say, well, how's Bernie ever going to get anything done? And how are you going to get anything done if you're a progressive in Congress? Well, but he can't get anything done because his colleagues are people like Senator Feinstein, who are deeply, deeply conservative and bathed in the big money. Now look, guys, if you want progressives to win, whether it's any progressive in the country, not associated with just Democrats, not associated with Young Turks or anything else, bless your heart, you gotta give the small donations so they could overcome. And here, good example is Beto O'Rourke. Has nothing to do with anything that I run. I interviewed him the other day. He doesn't take any PAC money. And I wish he'd join us at Just Democrats. He hasn't yet, but you should support him. He's running against Ted Cruz. and we need to defeat Ted Cruz, and the only way you can do it is with small donors. Same thing with Allison. If you don't give at jdems.us/Allison, well then you can't say, hey, we tried, or I did my part. By the way, if you want to volunteer, great, volunteer.
Please,
yes,
please,
that would be
yes.
great. Allison led an army of over 1,000 volunteers in the state of California to pass the Wolfpack resolution. So for people who don't know, what is Wolfpack? What was the resolution in California and what happened there?
Wolfpack is a political organization that is solely working on the issue of money in politics, and specifically to get that 28th Amendment to the US Constitution. And so we are working state by state to pass our resolutions to make sure that we can get that amendment. And in California, it was AJR1. We passed it in 2014. And Mike Gatto, Representative Mike Gatto, former representative who was the sponsor of that, he, along with, I believe it was Witkowski, was the representative or the senator, they had actually introduced it beforehand. They had actually decided on that before Wolfpack came in to help them. They were ahead of the curve in that way. So we do have really good people in government who want to get this done, but they were stopped because they didn't have the right amount of pressure and organization that they needed from the community. So that's where Wolfpack came in. We came in 2013, and I started organizing a force to be reckoned with. And we figured it out every step of the way, and we eventually got it passed with their help and working together to make that happen.
And where did you come from? Right, I know, but I want the audience to know. How'd you get involved in Wolfpack? You were a lobbyist before, you were a politician before, what were you?
I taught high school. I taught English, and then I also taught an intervention program for students who are at risk of not graduating high school. And it was through teaching high school and the number of the impact that so many policies had on the working class community that I taught in, and on my own family through the decisions around immigration and healthcare and minimum wage and whether or not my students could afford to go to college, so that should they bother really working so hard in high school. I mean, the one thing after another, I saw how these policies were affecting real everyday lives. And I finally saw that it really came down to the influence of money in our political system. And that's when I decided to get involved in the movement. And it was through that that I found Wolfpack through doing a Google search online.
What do I tell people? Just Google it.
It's worth the Google.
Yes. And I'm going to keep on saying it. JDems, this isn't just Democrats, jdems.us/Allison. We'll have the link below in the description box if you're watching this later and not live. And so you Google it, and okay, but there's a million groups working on this. One of them is not Dianne Feinstein, but
shocker.
Why did you choose Wolfpack? Did you watch The Young Turks or something?
No, I actually had no idea who you were, Cenk.
Okay,
sorry.
Bless your heart. Okay.
No, I didn't know who the Young Turks were. I didn't know who Cenk was, and I read the plan. I read Wolfpack's plan online, and it was not only the most logical plan, but it was the most aggressive one. And I understand, and I know that the people of this country and the state of California, in particular, understand that this issue of our democracy being corroded by the wealthy elite who are incapable of understand, not necessarily bad people, but just incapable of understanding the issues that we deal with, is systemic, and it's urgent. It is fiercely urgent. We've got to do everything we can right now, and that's why I made the difficult decision to leave teaching to do this full time.
By the way, wolf-pack.com if you want to help that cause. If you want to help Just Democrats overall, justdemocrats.com/win. Okay, now look, I agree with you that the California race is monumentally important. Because if progressives win in California, and by the way, why doesn't California have a progressive senator? Our senior senator should be incredibly progressive. Fox News should be complaining about the senator from California every day, but they almost never do. We have an incredibly conservative senator. So, Allison, Just a final thought here. So Feinstein, everybody says, no, she's been in politics for half a century. She has all of the establishment locked up. She has almost all the endorsements. She's going to go to the, you know, the defense contractors and the healthcare companies and raise all that money. So you can't win. So what's your answer to that?
That's the reason I will win, because people are done with that. We're done. And so as long as we get out there and we vote and help me to get the word out, and let's do this together. This isn't about me, this is about us. All of us have got to come together and show up every single day to make up for the money that she's gonna raise. And that's what we're gonna do.
Okay, so no PACs.
No PACs, no corporate money.
All right, then it's on you guys. If you want a progressive senator, you gotta make it happen. And if you do it in California, then it opens the door to every other race. Every media person in the country always says, oh, well, progressives never win. And if progressives win in California, that will shock the world and then get them to go, hey, maybe all the other progressive candidates can win. If the so-called mighty Feinstein falls, then anything is possible. That opens up all the other 2018 races, especially if we got around the ropes. Let alone 2020, which is going to be monumentally important. This is your one shot at the Death Star. So let's go get them. My role as campaign advisor will be voluntary. It'll be informal, and I'm acting as a person here, not as the guy who runs the company or anything along those lines. Obviously, on this show, we care about the issues. We're not like the rest of the media. Well, I'm neutral. I don't know. Maybe people on death row who are innocent, you know, maybe they should get executed anyway. No, they shouldn't get executed. 150 people were on death row who we later found out were innocent. I don't want a senator who's for the death penalty. I don't want a senator who's never going to try to get money out of politics or Medicare for all. So yes, I, Cenk Uygur, care. Yes, I would love to be your campaign advisor. And yes, we are going to defeat her.
We are.
All right. You gonna go get it?
We're gonna go get it. Let's do it.
I love it. jdems.us/Allison. Let's go make it happen. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you,
now,
Jake.
Allison will be back at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, and we'll talk to her again. And then we'll go through a lot of those Just Democrat candidates, some of whom you've met before, some of whom you're gonna meet for the first time. So the 2018 elections have now officially begun. And they say that the progressives, as always, all of the establishment media says, oh, the Tea Party has a chance. People backed by Breitbart have a chance. The most extreme right wingers have a chance. But progressives never have a chance. Let's show them they're wrong and let's do it together. So Allison's gonna be back in a couple hours. When I come back, the amazing story that Donna Brazile has revealed, that in fact, the DNC did rig the Democratic primaries. You don't wanna miss that. We'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks. This is a hell of a day, man. Wait till you see the Donna Brazile story, let alone all the other ones. But I gotta read your tweets first. Screaming for Change says, just got teary-eyed. She is the future, you can see it. She's so solid, strong, such a go-getter. Wow, game over, Dianne Feinstein. Look, I'm gonna talk about this more later, but I picked Allison when she was a teacher. First, she picked herself, she volunteered. And then we hired her as California State Director, and then she eventually became National Director. You have no idea how strong she is. That's why I'm positive that she's a great, great candidate. You gotta back her, though. If you don't back her, she's not gonna win. If you do back her, there's nothing that's gonna stop us. jdems.us/Allison. Brian Newton says, wait, is that Allison? Awesome. Your mama says, Cenk, the campaign advisor, does dude ever plan on sleeping again? Ha ha. The correct answer is no. Sleep is optional. I'll sleep when the war is over. And yes, the war has begun. The civil war has begun. And we're done with the conservative corporate Democrats. If California doesn't do it, who will? So if you're in California, you absolutely positively have to step up. You don't have to be in California to donate, though. Atypical Southerner says, Americans see California as a testbed for progressive policies. That's right, California leads the country in a lot of those ways. You know, California, if it was a nation, would be the sixth largest nation in the world. So it is monumentally important. That is why all of us all throughout the country have to band together here. Look, she's not taking PAC money and she can't take anything above $2,700 for the primary and $2,700 for the general election. So the most she can get, even if a billionaire wanted to help her, is $5,400. So it has to be you guys. It has to be all of you guys doing as much as you can. People's Platform says, congrats, Allison. I met you in New Mexico with Wolfpack fighting to get money out of politics. You are, in fact, too strong. Joseph S. says, dang, money in politics is going to be a key topic during this race, as it should have been from the very beginning. Awesome. Later in the 3-hour coverage of the election, we're going to show you a poll that we commissioned. It turns out we didn't know what the answer was going to be about the top issue in this particular race in California. Number one issue, money in politics. They said, oh, nobody cares about that. It's just an esoteric campaign finance reform issue. No, we knew it from day one. The problem is corruption. And Steve, our own Steve O says, take note, Allison Hartson spent years fighting to get money out of politics, whereas Feinstein is money in politics, time for change. Couldn't agree more. Let's make it happen. By the way, let's shock the world, man. If we raise a lot of money tonight, right out of the gate, without any big donors, I think that the folks in Washington and media are going to be shocked at what we can do. Okay, I got a lot more about that later in the program, but let's go to the Donna Brazile story. Okay. Now, Donna Brazile was the interim chair of the DNC, and she took over for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. This was during the 2016 elections, obviously. During the primaries, a lot of folks, including us here at the Young Turks, said that the DNC was clearly favoring Hillary Clinton. We had plenty of evidence right out in the public, the way that they tried to minimize the debates, put them at times they would not be watched very much, the polling booths that were closed in places like Rhode Island and Arizona, which made no sense, as the Democratic Party was rightfully complaining about how the Republican Party does voter suppression. There was plenty of evidence out in the public. And then, unfortunately for Donna Brazile, we found out through WikiLeaks that she had leaked questions during the debates to Hillary Clinton's team. At first, she denied it. Our own reporter, Jordan Charton, was the first one to notice that and ask CNN about it when the WikiLeaks were released. He was also the first one to question Donna Brazile about whether she did it. She denied it at the time. Now she has admitted that she did do it. And she had said earlier, quote, it was a mistake I will forever regret. So we were right. She did in fact leak those questions, and she has admitted that. But today, she admits far, far more. It turns out that the primary was in fact absolutely, positively rigged. This is the person who was the chair of the DNC. Now listen to what she says. She says, I had promised Bernie when I took the helm of the Democratic National Committee after the convention that I would get to the bottom of whether Hillary Clinton's team had rigged the nomination process, as a cache of emails stolen by the Russian hackers and posted online had suggested. I'd had my suspicions from the moment I walked in the door of the DNC a month or so earlier based on the leaked emails. So, she says, I followed the money. My predecessor, Florida Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, had not been the most active chair in fundraising at a time when President Barack Obama's neglect had left the party in significant debt. So, now you're going to see overwhelming and clear evidence here in a sec that not only they rigged it, but how they rigged it. But here she's explaining why they rigged it. So, and I'm sure that the folks at the DNC and the Democratic establishment are going to be furious with Donna Brazile. And given that a lot of the progressive camp was already furious with her, I think that this is a courageous act. She's not going to have many allies left, but the truth is more important than that, and at least she has shared it today. And I know that a lot of you will think she should have shared it earlier. I understand that. I certainly empathize with that, but it is really important for us to know. And here she is saying Wasserman Schultz didn't do her job. That is a heavy blow to Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She must be livid today. But furthermore, she says Barack Obama had neglected the party and left it in significant debt. That is another bold statement. And she knows, she was there, she saw the numbers. In fact, in this piece in Politico, she shares the numbers. So let's keep going. She says, as Hillary's campaign gained momentum, she resolved the party's debt and put it on a starvation diet. It had become dependent on her campaign for survival, for which she expected to wield control of its operations. So there you have it. So the party is in terrible debt, according to Brazil, because of Wasserman Schultz and Obama. And Hillary Clinton says, well, I could give you the money, but there's going to be strings attached, and I'm going to exercise control. So she went on to say, Brazil did, Debbie was not a good manager. She hadn't been very interested in controlling the party. She let Clinton's headquarters in Brooklyn do as it desired, so she didn't have to inform the party officers how bad the situation was. How much control Brooklyn had and for how long was still something I had been trying to uncover for the last few weeks. So Brooklyn is Hillary's campaign headquarters. It is now absolutely clear that during the primaries that the DNC was actually being run by Hillary's headquarters. It doesn't get any more rigged than this. So look, a lot of people tried to influence the general election, and I'm still livid over that. But no one influenced the primaries and rigged the primaries more than the DNC. I wish it weren't so. Republicans will jump on this, and I'm very saddened by that. But the way to prevent that is not to cover up the truth. The way to prevent that is to not rig it in the first place. So, but there's more devastating revelations here. She explains, by September 7th, the day I called Bernie, I had found my proof and it broke my heart. She said, the Saturday morning after the convention in July, I called Gary Gensler, the chief financial officer of Hillary's campaign. He wasted no words. He told me the Democratic Party was broke and $2 million in debt. Actually, they were in far bigger debt earlier before Hillary Clinton's team injected some money, and again with the attached provisions that they now run the DNC in the middle of a race where the DNC theoretically is supposed to be neutral between all of the different Democrats running, and they were not neutral because they had literally in this case been bought. But even so, by the time that Donna Brazile takes over, and it's now after the convention, they're still in $2 million of debt, and Hillary's finance chair explains that to Brazile. And she goes on to explain, he described the party as fully under the control of Hillary's campaign, which seemed to confirm the suspicions of the Bernie camp. The campaign had the DNC on life support, giving it money every month to meet its basic expenses, while the campaign was using the party as a fundraising clearinghouse. Now that goes to a second really important revelation. The first part of that sentence, of that paragraph, is already devastating. If you thought the election, the primary election, was rigged, you were 100% right. So, by the way, going forward, still there will be a lot of people who, some who will be disingenuous, but some who will not have seen this confession and admission by Donna Brazile. And they'll say, oh, it's a conspiracy theory that it was rigged. And a lot of the mainstream media, I'm waiting for their apology. So when we talked about the evidence that was already available publicly as to why it appeared that the DNC was clearly favoring one of the candidates over the others, the rest of the media treated it as, oh, you know, look at these Bernie supporters, this Bernie camp making these wild allegations. They were wrong. They did not treat it with the credibility that it deserved, and we were right. And that matters. And going forward, when you say that the election was rigged, they'll say, oh, come on, are you saying that? It's not us, it's the head of the DNC who says, yes, I was there, I saw the numbers, I talked to the people, it was definitely rigged. But the second part is as equally important. They used the DNC for money laundering. Now it's not illegal, it's money laundering in a legal way, but for this gross amount of big donor money that they flushed through the DNC, but eventually the Hillary's campaign. This is also something that we reported on. To be fair to Politico, Politico had reported on it earlier as well during the campaign. And she explains how they funneled the money through. Under the FEC law, an individual can contribute maximum of $2,700 directly to a presidential campaign. But the limits are much higher for contributions to state parties and a party's national committee. Individuals who had maxed out their $2,700 contribution limit to the campaign could write an additional check for $353,400 to the Hillary Victory Fund. That figure represented $10,000 to each of the 32 state parties who are part of the Victory Fund agreement, $320,000 and $33,400 to the DNC. The money would be deposited in the states first and transferred to the DNC shortly after that. Money in the battleground states usually stayed in that state, but all the other states funneled that money directly to the DNC, which quickly transferred the money to Brooklyn. Bernie never had a chance when it came to the DNC. They were already doing money laundering for his opponent. I'm not sure there's ever been a primary in this country as unfair as this one was. In general elections, there have been a lot of dirty tricks. And don't get me wrong, in the Republican primary, for example, in 2000, George Bush and Karl Rove did terribly dirty tricks with robocalls that were malicious and racist against John McCain. But they did not control the RNC as thoroughly as Hillary Clinton has controlled the DNC. So yes, there were terrible dirty tricks in plenty of primaries. But no primary, as far as I know, and this admission goes, was anywhere near as rigged as this primary in 2016. If you believe that at the time, you were right. And all the people who were skeptical were absolutely wrong. So she explains that Politico did break that story at the time. And when the Politico story described this arrangement as, quote, essentially money laundering for the Clinton campaign, Hillary's people were outraged at being accused of doing something shady. Now, in reality, as she explains, they knew exactly that that is what they were doing, but they pretended to be outraged in public and in the press. And when they did, a lot of the press was cowed and didn't cover it as aggressively. Their control over the press is another scandal, but that's for another day. Let me keep going on this story. Donna Brazile continues to explain, yet the states kept less than half of 1% of the $82 million they had amassed from the extravagant fundraisers Hillary's campaign was holding. Now, if they funneled 99.5% of the money to Hillary, I think that it is fair to call that money laundering. Now, it's not, again, in this case, it doesn't happen to be illegal. I think our campaign finance laws are disastrous. I think we've legalized bribery in 100 different ways, and this is one of the ways. But was it funneling and laundering the money through the DNC and eventually to the Hillary campaign? Yes. Okay, the party chair usually shrinks the staff, Brazile explains, between presidential election campaigns, but Debbie had chosen to not do that. She had stuck lots of consultants on the DNC payroll, and Obama's consultants were being financed by the DNC too. And Brazile explains that because that is part of the reason why they were broke. During the elections, you're supposed to power up, you hire consultants theoretically to help you win elections, although Democratic consultants almost never do that. They lose all of the close races, and they've lost the House, the Senate, the presidency. They lost 69 out of 99 state legislatures, but the consultants get rich either way. But you're supposed to power down in order to save money so you don't go broke in between elections. But Obama and Wasserman Schultz said, no, don't power down, keep going. Keep paying our Democratic consultant friends. So they took and they took and they took. And some of you gave money to the DNC. They took that money. I don't know what they did with it during the off election cycle. What were we telling you on the Young Turks throughout? It's the Democratic consultants and lobbyists that are the real powers behind the DNC. They're the ones that are now attacking Bernie Sanders supporters and Keith Ellison supporters. They're the ones who attacked Keith Ellison in the first place. They're the ones who are saying, do not look at our budget. Because if you looked at the budget, you would know that most of the money is going to those corrupt Democratic consultants. And now this is another case where we were proven right. And the revelations show you that it is in fact true. Now, they explain about the agreement. So Brazile actually found a written agreement between the Hillary camp and the DNC. She said the agreement signed by Amy Dacey, the former CEO of the DNC, and Robbie Mook with a copy of the with a copy to Mark Elias, the lawyer, specified that in exchange for raising money and investing in the DNC, Hillary would control the party's finances, strategy, and all the money raised. Her campaign had a right of first refusal of who would be the party communications director, and it would make the final decisions on all the other staff. The DNC also was required to consult with the campaign about all other staffing, budgeting, data, analytics, and mailings. Complete and utter control of the DNC by one of the candidates running in a primary. No election has ever been so rigged in US history. So now it doesn't mean, I want to be clear about this, that they went and changed votes. Now some of you believe that, and we've got to get further proof of that, but this is not the issue here. They rigged it in every other way. The communications staffer to the DNC is working for Hillary Clinton behind the scenes. The finances are all going to Hillary Clinton. Everything that was done at the DNC was done at the orders of one of the candidates, to the discrimination and bias against all of the other candidates, including Bernie Sanders. And now if you're saying, well, maybe it was after the primaries and during the general election, which actually would be normal. During the general election, the candidate that has won then used the party to help that party's leader win. That is not what happened here. So one final piece of clarity. This victory fund agreement, Brazil says, however, had been signed in August of 2015, just 4 months after Hillary announced her candidacy and nearly a year before she officially had the nomination. They have in so many ways ruined the Democratic Party. Now, who in their right mind is going to donate to the DNC given this level of corruption? But I want to defeat Republicans. I am a progressive. So I believe that the progressive candidate is better off. I think uncorrupted candidates who don't take corporate PAC money, who don't take lobbyists, are way better off. And yes, you should definitely give to those specific candidates. But the party needs infrastructure. It needs to be an actual fighter for progressive causes. It hasn't been that for a long, long time. And now the corruption that is revealed is so thorough that you can't, that donating to the DNC, you know, to this day we can't see where the budget is going. To this day, the same consultants that ripped you off before are ripping you off today. Who would give to that organization? These corrupt people inside the DNC have destroyed the Democratic Party. They have taken and taken and taken. They've taken all the money and they robbed it blind. Now, when Democrats lose, they turn around and blame progressives? Are you kidding me? It is 100% your fault. All you cared about was taking the money out of this, and people gave their hard-earned money to help progressives win, and you didn't do that. And at the end, through all this corruption, what happened? You lost to Donald Trump anyway. There's no one else to blame. Now, the former chair of the DNC explains, yes, it was the DNC. Yes, it was the Hillary Clinton campaign. This ends almost all debates on this issue. It was corrupt, it was rigged. They purposely picked Hillary Clinton. And if we had a fair election and a fair primary, perhaps we could have had a different candidate. And most importantly, a different president. These people didn't care about progressive ideology or priorities. All they cared about was money and their own personal careers. And now the result is we have Donald Trump for president. I can't think of anything more shameful. This is exactly what we're going to end at the Democratic Party. It is time for progressives to take over. Enough with corporate Democrats. They have ruined any chance of progressives winning in this country. They must step out of the way immediately. Everyone involved in this should, of course, be fired. And Obama, who helped destroy the Democratic Party in this case by accruing all of those debts, and then saying, no, 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 keep paying my consultant friends, then installs Tom Perez as the leader of the DNC. Now, you trust Tom Perez? You trust the people running the DNC today? Are you kidding me? You have to get rid of all of them. We have to start from scratch. It's time for progressives to take over the party and to actually win elections and to actually be uncorrupted. Way, way past time to do that. Do it right now. Young Turks. All right, back on the Young Turks, Congressman Ro Khanna tweets, exciting that Alison Hartson is running for the Senate. She's all about getting money out of politics and brings a bold new voice. Love it. Now, let me go to tweets from you guys. Rob Brown writes in, Can someone tell me where this section is covered in Hillary's book? I can't find it. That's an awesome tweet. Rob, you get a t-shirt, okay? So this section where they laundered money through the DNC and rigged the primaries, no, that was not in Hillary's totally bullshit book. Okay, I think I'm pretty clear on that. By the way, on Allison, we're gonna talk about this more later, but the first goal, one, they think that we can't be competitive because we're not gonna be able to raise enough money to compete with the millions of dollars that Feinstein is gonna take in. We gotta prove them wrong. And the more we do, the more the press writes about it and we create a virtuous cycle. But also, you actually need $147,000 to get the voter rolls. You can't win without the voter rolls. It is super, super important. I'm sharing with you guys details that nobody else would ever talk about, but it's important because you're gonna be part of this process. And if you don't do it, then we can't do it. So let's see if we can get her to $147,000 right out of the gate. jdems.us/Allison. Okay, there it is, jdems.us/Allison. Okay, now back to more about the Donna Brazile revelations. Mandy Blizzardborn says, I don't feel like running around saying nana nana today. I'm heartbroken. We could have had President Bernie. We could have. Chelsea Charles says, so very disappointing, but also not surprising. The corruption in Washington is endless. That's why Justice Democrats are running as uncorrupted. No corporate PAC money, okay? Alice is not taking any PAC money at all. Now, Lentil Soup says, Brazil's positioning herself as left of Obama, Hillary, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz because she knows where the party is headed. Regardless, kudos to her saying this. Yes, look, the truth is always welcome. And I don't know or really even care that much about Donna Brazile's motivations. If she wants to head left, great. But the most important thing is the revelations themselves. Dr. Chaos MD says the Clintons and their acolytes have been a cancer on our country and holding us back for their own gain. It is despicable. Unfortunately true. You know, it's funny, after all this time, it was never personal. And so as much as I fought as hard as I could to get Bernie to win in the primaries, and I opened, you know, rallies for him, we had him on the show, I genuinely believed in his cause, and it's not about the person, it's about the policies. But I now think that the level of selfishness and greed that was displayed by the Clinton empire within the Democratic Party, well, if anything's personal, I guess that's personal. It's worse than I imagined, and it is really disheartening. All right, now let's do some of the other news of today. Okay. So, amazing story coming out of Vanity Fair about the inner workings of the Trump administration. There's no end to these stories, but this one is a doozy because it turns out that Donald Trump has decided that Ivanka's husband, not only is he questioning his decisions, I don't know what the implications of that will be. Will he be fired? That would be amazing. But when Donald Trump thinks you're an idiot, oh boy, man. That is as almost as low as it can get if you're in the right wing. I mean, left wing, of course, he has a lot of mistaken impressions about. Okay, so Sam Nunberg is a person who used to work for Trump's campaign. And here's what he says about the mood now that Manafort and others have been arrested. Here's what Manafort's indictment tells me. Mueller is going to go over every financial dealing of Jared Kushner and the Trump campaign and the Trump organization. And I hope that's true, and if it is true, I believe they will find amazing, terrible information in there. And that family is in way bigger trouble than they realize. Nunberg continues, Trump is at 33% in the Gallup poll. You can't go any lower, he's fucked. Now, that is a former campaign aide to Donald Trump, a guy on his side. But he thinks they're in a world of trouble. By the way, he is wrong about one thing. He can and he will go lower than 33%. I guarantee it. Okay, now continuing with the Gabriel Sherman story in Vanity Fair. He explains, for the first time since the investigation began, the prospect of impeachment is being considered as a realistic outcome and not just a liberal fever dream. According to a source, advisors in the West Wing are on the edge and doing whatever they can not to be ensnared. So there's panic inside the White House that they're gonna get caught up in the impeachment. This is my favorite part of the story, even more than the Jared Kushner part. One person close to Dina Powell and Gary Cohn said they're making sure to leave rooms if the subject of Russia comes up. Those are the Goldman Sachs people. They came in to pilfer the place. They're like, well, we came here for the tax cuts. We want to make sure that our corporations and our rich friends got all of the tax cuts we ever dreamed of. I don't want any part of Russia. I don't want any part of criminal investigations, okay? We do our pilfering legally. We just buy off the government, we legalize bribes, and then we bribe the government so much they put us into power, and then we pass legislation to give trillions of dollars to our rich friends. But we don't want any part of Russia. Where's the exits? Where's the exits? When the Goldman guys start to look for the exits, you know that you're in trouble. Okay, an unnamed White House source tells Vanity Fair, his options are limited, referring to Trump. And his instinct is to come out swinging, which won't help things. That's partly how he got in trouble in the first place. He fired James Comey because he had begun an investigation of him, which made things far worse. And then, like an idiot, said on national television, yeah, I fired him because of the Russia investigation. You pretty much just proved obstruction of justice. So yes, Trump will likely come out swinging because he doesn't know how stupid he is, and probably wind up punching himself in the face as he has done many times. But we're going to go back to that Comey firing because apparently that's part of what they're so mad at Jared Kushner about. So speaking to Steve Bannon on Tuesday, Trump blamed Jared Kushner for his role in decisions. Specifically, the firings of Mike Flynn and James Comey that led to Mueller's appointment, according to a source briefed on the call. When Roger Stone recently told Trump that Kushner was giving him bad political advice, Trump agreed, according to someone familiar with the conversation. Damn. Who's that under the bus? Oh, look, it's his son-in-law. Come here, I've got a great wedding for you. You're going to get married to my daughter. Oh no, it's a Jared wedding. Look, Kush, first, there's two things that are part of this. Fine, three. Look, if you're going to get me to defend Jared Kushner or try to defend Jared Kushner, you're going to fail. Jared Kushner is guilty of knowing all of this stuff, helping Donald Trump with his horrific policies, and he is not very bright at all. Remember, his dad had to basically bribe Harvard with $2 million to get him in. Then he did one of the worst real estate deals in New York history. He's a serial bungler, just like his father-in-law. So am I surprised that Kushner gave bad advice on firing Comey and Flynn? No, I'm not remotely surprised. But number two, you can't get rid of personal responsibility. Okay? I thought Republicans were for that. Trump, whenever something goes wrong, goes, that's not me, it's not me, it's him, it's him, it's him. But he's running out of people. And kind of like Tony Soprano, he's going to have to go to his family now and go, oh, you, now you go under the bus. But once you've thrown your family under the bus, there's no one left. This looks like the end game. So, and then number three, specifically on the Comey firing, you're going to blame Kushner? You wanted to fire Comey. You said all along that you were disgruntled with Comey. You said on national TV you wanted to fire him because of the Russia investigation. You are ultimately responsible no matter who gave you the advice. And you can't kid anyone that you didn't want to fire Comey. What, your son-in-law twisted your arm? No, you wanted to fire him. Mike Flynn's a different story. You thought his corruption was part of your corruption and you probably wanted to protect him. But Comey, you definitely wanted fired. Okay, back to Nunberg, the Trump campaign aide. He said, Jared is the worst political advisor in the White House in modern history. Damn. He went on to say, I'm only saying publicly what everyone says behind the scenes at Fox News, in conservative media, and the Senate, and Congress. So, they don't say it to our face, but internally, apparently, they all think Jared Kushner is a total moron. But don't worry, luckily, he's only in charge of half of the policy at the White House, the China policy. He's supposed to bring us peace in the Middle East. He's in charge of, there was one broad definition of how he was in charge of fixing everything at the White House, such a Trumpian thing, right? And it goes on and on. So apparently, all conservatives behind the scenes agree Jared Kushner is an idiot, and you gave him half the White House to run. Nicely done, Donald. Oh, please fire him. That would be awesome. And Trump still thinks he's on The Apprentice. It's been a whole week, Donald. You got to fire someone. That's how the show works. Okay. Now, another part of that Vanity Fair story that's very important. So Gabriel Sherman with a really interesting story in Vanity Fair about how there's panic in the Trump White House. They're worried about the impeachment. They think it's now a legitimate possibility. They're considering throwing even Jared Kushner under the bus. And so at the end of the article, though, they explain why Uranium One is in the news. Now, I talked about this days ago, I think before almost anyone else did. And it honestly took me a little while to figure it out. So now Uranium One, the selling of our uranium interests to Russian companies, I think was a real issue 6 to 7 years ago. I think that it was a legitimate issue during the campaign. And I covered it recently, but I said, but why is it coming up now? It doesn't make any sense. If Hillary Clinton was president, maybe we could continue to talk about that. Did anything go wrong there, right? But Hillary Clinton isn't president. So that Uranium One deal, even if it were a real story, is now pretty much totally irrelevant. And then I figured it out. I'm like, oh, they're gonna say that Robert Mueller was the head of the FBI at the time, and hence he should go. Now we have confirmation that that is exactly what they're planning. So Sherman explains, Roger Stone, of course, one of the top advisors of the president, believes defunding Mueller isn't enough. Instead, Stone wants Trump to call for a special prosecutor to investigate Hillary Clinton's role in approving the controversial Uranium One deal. Why? Why Uranium One? Well, exactly for what I explained to you days ago. It's a bit of a bank shot, but as Stone described it, a special prosecutor looking into Uranium One would also have to investigate the FBI's role in approving the deal, thereby making Mueller, who was in charge of the Bureau at the time, a target. They go on to explain, Stone's choice for a special prosecutor, Rudy Giuliani's law colleague, Mark Mukasey, hilarious, or Fox News pundit Andrew Napolitano, hilarious. And here's the quote from Stone, you would immediately have to inform Mueller, Comey, and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein that they are under federal investigation. Trump can't afford to fire Mueller politically, but this pushes him aside. Well, thank you very much for letting us know what your plot is out in the open. So now if you hear about Uranium One on Fox News or from Republican congressmen, you know for a fact that it is a Roger Stone plot. Roger Stone is the hatchet man for a lot of Republicans, primarily now, of course, Donald Trump. And so he hatched this plot that has nothing to do with the reality of who's in power today or what would be a relevant investigation. Its specific purpose is to try to get rid of the special prosecutor because of what he might find out about Donald Trump and his connections to Russia. So anyone talking about Uranium One going forward, you have to understand that that issue is completely illegitimate. It is a political trick. So I'm just amazed that they're telling people. So thank you for being stupid enough to confirm what we had suspected. So totally illegitimate issue, made up as a political trick. End of question, period. Anyone talking about Uranium One is part of literally a Republican plot to try to protect the president from a legitimate investigation of his connections to Russia. Okay, now real quick, let me go to the next story. Okay, so Jake Tapper is the latest victim of a smear job by the right wing. He had said something perfectly normal after the New York City terrorist attack that killed 8 people. Let's show you.
The Arabic chant, Allah Akbar, God is great, sometimes said under the most beautiful of circumstances, and too often we hear of it being said in moments like this.
When we hear it said before moments like this, and it's true, the terrorists in this case did shout Allahu Akbar during the attack. Now, Fox News, though, took that a little out of context, to say the least. They say CNN's Jake Tapper says Allahu Akbar is beautiful right after New York City terror attack. No, that's not what he said. He said, sometimes it is said in a beautiful context, which is true, because it just means God is great. So when you praise God or Lord or Jesus, that's said in a beautiful context. If you do it right before you kill people because you're a part of the army of God or whatever Christian group, that would be said in a terrible context. Same thing here. In this case, it's a Muslim radical. A lot of Muslims say Allahu Akbar in beautiful circumstances, and a lot of them say, unfortunately, way too many, as we've seen in terrorist attacks, are saying it under horrific circumstances, which is exactly what Tapper said. Instead, here's Jason Chaffetz on Fox News twisting his words again.
Jake Tapper, also from CNN, felt the need to remind viewers how beautiful the phrase Allah Akbar can be.
There's no end to their deceptions. So Tapper is furious. He goes on Twitter and says, Fox News is lying. I said it can be said at beautiful moments, wedding, birth, and too often at times like this, horrific terrorist attack. He goes on to say, Fox News chooses instead to deliberately lie about what I said, following the slime-coated path of Daily Caller and InfoWars. Disgusting. And it's true, it originally started in the Daily Caller, which is a total propaganda rag. It is funded to be Republican propaganda, and there is no bar low enough. InfoWars is for lunatics who believe in 80% bears, pigs, gorillas, or whatever else Jones thinks. Now, it was so bad that Mediate reports Fox News has deleted the tweet, which drew Tapper's ire, I should say. And so they knew that they were wrong. And in fact, even Chaffetz came out and tweeted, in retrospect, I don't think I gave Jake Tapper a fair shake tonight, my bad. Well, that's good of him to at least admit that. And Tapper explains, I ignored the lie for a day. It started with some kid at the Daily Caller, then to InfoWars and Breitbart News. Now it's on TV, where next? And that's why he said he came out. And he said there was a time when one could tell the difference between Fox and the nut jobs at InfoWars. It's getting tougher and tougher. Lies are lies. Well, let's pause there for a second. Look, I agree 100% with Jake Tapper. He's in the right here. Fox is in the wrong, no question about it. They smeared him, no question about it. But no, Fox News has always been that way. And a lot of the media were justifiably angry at this, as Tapper was. But Fox News has done this to Acorn, Shirley Sherrod, Planned Parenthood, and it was not the same level of outrage. It was reported as, well, you know, some people say this and other people say that. Well, we had half a dozen or more state investigations of the Planned Parenthood case. They all said that it wasn't true. Yet when Republicans say that they sold baby parts, they'd still treat it with, well, some people say this and some people say that. No, it is a slime-coated path of lies. And in that case, it is to try to take away rights of all women in the country. With all due respect, that is a far more serious issue that affects a lot more people than a news anchor. And again, I'm on Jake's side here. He's absolutely right. But it needs to be broader than that. You have to be honest with your audience. All Fox News does is lie. They've done this for decades. Look at OutFox. Watch the movie that Brave New Films did all those years ago. We've known this for almost the entire existence of Fox News. Acorn was to help poor people. And what did they do? They defunded it. They destroyed it. Acorn doesn't exist anymore. And it was based on lies. It was edited tapes of O'Keefe that Fox News ran over and over and over again. And those lies worked. And now poor people in America don't have access to all the things that Acorn used to help them with. That affected millions of people. I'm not saying you shouldn't be outraged by this. You absolutely should. But you should be equally outraged at all the other lies that have devastated millions of people that Fox News has spread. And you think they're done, they're never done. So even after all this, Sean Hannity came out and said this.
Now, Tapper has since been levying multiple attacks on the Fox News channel for reporting the comments in context that you just listened to. He tweeted, quote, Fox News is lying.
Well, it was so not in context that they deleted the tweet. And I think that's a pretty good admission. Chaffetz said he shouldn't have said it. But Hannity comes out and goes, I don't care. Hannity's a professional liar. That's what he does day in and day out. He's like, I don't care that others admitted that we were twisting the truth and giving it out of context. I'm going to keep on insisting on it. That's my job. And that is his job. One last one from Tapper. He said, Hannity lying now. The Fox News tweet I was referring to has been deleted because it was false. Well, as Tapper himself admits, it shouldn't be news to you that that's what Fox News does. It's not an accident. It's not a few bad apples. That's the whole point of Fox News. Okay, last story for you guys in this so-called hour. Okay. This is a fascinating story. Robert Mercer is the main funder of Breitbart. Of course, that employs Steve Bannon, used to employ Milo. He was the main funder of Ted Cruz and then switched over to Donald Trump and was his top funder. And brought Steve Bannon into the Trump campaign as well as Kellyanne Conway. So an enormous right-wing donor. He actually keeps Breitbart afloat with his money because they don't actually make any money. They're actually a propaganda outlet. But today, Mercer's saying that he is cutting ties with a lot of those folks. So, and then one last dramatic announcement at the end as well. I'll get to that in a second about his personal life. But first, on Milo. He says, I supported Milo in the hope and expectation that his expression of views contrary to the social mainstream and his spotlighting of the hypocrisy of those who would close down free speech in the name of political correctness would promote the type of open debate and freedom of thought that is being throttled on many American college campuses today. But in my opinion, actions of and statements by Mr. Yiannopoulos have caused pain and divisiveness, undermining the open and productive discourse that I had hoped to facilitate. I was mistaken to have supported him, and for several weeks have been in the process of severing all ties with him. Now, there's a couple of different issues with Milo. One is that he seemed to encourage pedophilia in an interview that was revealed that got him kicked off of Breitbart in the first place. But that is not when Robert Mercer wanted to cut ties with him. He thought, supporting pedophilia. You say tomato, I say tomato. What apparently did affect him, and by the way, it's a good thing that it affected him. Otherwise, he'd be a monster. One could still make an argument, but it is a good thing that he's severing ties with Milo. So what affected him? The recent report that came out that showed, proved that Milo had actually been taking notes from neo-Nazis and white nationalists and white supremacists and trying to soften it just a touch and then present it as the right-wing opinion of Breitbart, which is true. That is the opinion of Breitbart. They do, and it's shown absolutely by a great report BuzzFeed that they worked with, Milo worked with neo-Nazis and white nationalists to try to put their ideas into the mainstream. That was part of the point of Breitbart. The thing that he worked on was their manifesto. So apparently, neo-Nazis were a bridge a little too far for Robert Mercer. Well, thank you, we appreciate it. He goes on to then talk about Bannon. He says, the press has also intimated that my politics marches in lockstep with Steve Bannon's. Given the neo-Nazis, lockstep is probably the right word there. I have great respect for Mr. Bannon, and from time to time I do discuss politics with him. However, I make my own decisions with respect to whom I support politically. Those decisions do not always align with Mr. Bannon's. In other words, they largely do. But still distancing himself a little bit from Bannon. But the only reason Steve Bannon is in any national conversation is because of Robert Mercer. Robert Mercer insisted that he go in the Trump campaign during the convention, the RNC, Bannon, Kellyanne Conway were in his box, and then they were inserted into the Trump campaign after Manafort left. But even so, if they're losing their sugar daddy, that would be wonderful. Milo apparently is on the outs. We'll see what happens with Bannon. And then the last part of the political news, he said, for personal reasons, I have also decided to sell my stake in Breitbart News. Now that would be super important. Then they wouldn't have any money and they'd go out of business because they're not a real business. They don't believe in capitalism. They believe in socialism from the rich. But let me read you the rest of the sentence. Sell my stake in Breitbart News to my daughters. Okay, so in other words, you're going to keep on funding it. But it's caused too much embarrassment for you. So instead, you'll say, No, my daughters are the ones funding neo-Nazism and white nationalism, so it's okay, don't blame me. Way to hide behind your daughters, classy move, Robert Mercer. If you actually meant it and you were actually disgusted by it, or at least concerned, you didn't say disgusted, if you were concerned enough, you would stop working with Milo and Steve Bannon and Breitbart News. But it turns out the Mercer family is going to continue to fund this website whose main thesis was built on white nationalism. Well, the last part is personal and fascinating. He is stepping down, Mercer is, from his role as co-CEO of hedge fund Renaissance Technologies LLC. That is one of the largest hedge funds in the world, and his supply of money. Now, he unfortunately has so much that he would probably never ever run out. And apparently, he's still going to keep on laundering that money over to Breitbart despite this, you know, this publicity stunt for just basically to cover himself and to say to his friends in the financial world, no, I'm not associated with the neo-Nazis anymore. Those are just my daughters. If you really want to disassociate yourself, there's a really easy way to do it. Stop funding Breitbart. All right, we're way out of time here. John's got more stories for you guys, including the devastating tax cuts for the rich. We know the exact details now and how they're going to raise taxes on a lot of the middle class. And we've got a Jimmy Dore coming in at the top of the next hour, and we're going to interview a lot of Justice Democrats. We're going to have Allison back on, and we're going to talk about how she, what her plan is to defeat Dianne Feinstein. And if you haven't seen all of Dianne Feinstein's position, you're going to be shocked at how conservative she is. All right, jdems.us/Allison. Let's get to $147,000 so we can get those voter rolls and get rolling, literally. We'll be right back.